AI agents are everywhere, automating tasks and making decisions at machine speed. But agents make mistakes. Just one rogue agent can do big damage before you even notice. Rubrik Agent Cloud is the only platform that helps you monitor agents, set guardrails, and rewind mistakes, so you can unleash agents, not risk. Accelerate your AI transformation at rubrik.com. That's RUBRIK.com.
Off the ball, rugby.
There was no doubt about it that there was a lingering hangover from the Northampton semi-final still in the Aviva air.
Right.
I thought last Saturday night was witnessing the crowd of only 22,000. Every Leinster fan I've spoken to since that day can't not talk about any other match.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
Off the ball daily.
Now then, something we've been meaning to cover on the show recently is the future of dodgy boxes for sports streaming. So 1 in 5 Irish households are estimated to use a dodgy box. And Sky have said in the past month that they're looking into how they might be able to issue fines to users of dodgy boxes. So we've seen jail sentence issued to those who operate the dodgy box companies, the services. For example, there was a 16-month jail sentence handed down to a Kildare man last year for possession of over €900,000 in criminal proceeds from operating dodgy box streaming services. And one of the first instances we've seen of users being vulnerable came in Italy in May of this year, when 2,266 fines of at least €154 per person were issued to individual dodgy box users. So the question today really is how vulnerable dodgy box users in Ireland might be, if that's happening soon. We're going to be speaking to a number of people on this subject. We're going to hear from Irish sports bodies to hear about their approach to this. We'll hear from Adam Leventhal in a while as well. He's been doing great work on the subject for The Athletic, and he'll speak to us from, I guess, a former Sky Sports standpoint and from a UK standpoint as well. Very happy to say that News Talk's technology correspondent Jess Kelly is with us for this slot. Jess, how are you doing?
I'm very well, Owen, thank you.
Before we get into this, let's have a listen to some of you out there. Our reporter Ben Symes took to Grafton Street.
Do you use any illegal sites to watch sports at home?
Without saying that. Yeah, I do, yeah. Why do I use it? Probably just the easiness of it. You get to see more games than what you would do that are broadcast maybe on Sky Sports or TNT. It's cheaper as well, obviously, so that's probably the main reason why.
Yes, usually because they're too expensive to be able to afford the regular sites.
I don't think I use any illegal sites to watch content at home now, like sports or concerts or anything.
To be honest, who doesn't? The prices of the Sky Box nowadays, and for what you get, I'll be honest, it's not worth it. Like,
I think mostly because I don't know about them. I wouldn't have any other objection to using them.
I don't know.
You don't?
We have Sky Sports ourselves, so.
I probably used to use illegal sites when I was younger and couldn't afford it, and now we just pay for them. So.
Yeah. Probably just the cost of the providers overall is a bit too high.
No, I don't.
No.
I pay. Yeah, man. My dad pays because he thinks that we all have to pay. He always said me that if everyone pays, football will be cheaper.
Do I use any illegal? Yes.
Every day. Because it's expensive to be all these Sky Sports. It's quite expensive, to be fair.
100%. 100%. We wish Buzz buy a national Sky Box. Too much money. I should have robbed me blind. I'm there buying Sky Sports. I don't even have TNT Sports. I don't have Sky Movies. I don't have any of that crack. I'm paying half the price for half the damage. Oh, when if I went and got a dodgy box, half the price, I get everything I want.
Okay, Jess, that's a very common theme throughout that, particularly for people who want to consume sports content at home, is that there are a multitude of different services that you need to pay for in order to have a full suite of sports content available to you, and people just think the cost is too high. Does the technology correspondent hat on you, does that make you think, yeah, you know what, fair enough, or are you thinking, lads, come on?
Lads, come on. Right? And it's not to sit on this moral high horse and, you know, give out and wag the finger. But of course, like, everything in life is expensive, right? Like, I recently sat down with my bank statement and a highlighter because I'm a dork and cancelled some of my own streaming services because they're too much money. That's on me to either pay for them or not have access to them. Now, I fully accept the cost of the sporting channels, and particularly to have all of them, is bananas money. Like, for you to watch a full weekend of sports, say it's like a really, really busy weekend of sport, firstly, you have to pay your TV license. you have to pay for your broadband, you have to pay for the TV itself, then you're paying for a TV package that may or may not come as standard with some of these channels. And you could be looking at anything from like 20 quid a month right up to 40 quid a month to get access to have all of the channels. That is an awful lot to pay out to have access to sport. And I think it is deeply frustrating, and I live with a massive sports fan, so I know the pain and I see the bills. I understand it, but I also don't think it's... I still don't get how we're in that state where we can hear people so blasé going, oh yeah, I know it's illegal, but it's very expensive.
Mm. What we're going to do this hour is we're going to hear from some of the smaller sports streaming services, particularly the Irish ones, such as the League of Ireland and LOI TV and Clubber. And I would suggest, I can't speak for the people that we heard from on Grafton Street there, I would suggest that they would have a lot more sympathy for those organisations, especially money that's being pumped back into Irish sport. The thing here is that people see the conglomerate of Sky or TNT and they're not Irish and they're like, screw them. It doesn't actually matter.
And I understand that. I, back in the day, would sit at home with the family computer and use LimeWire and Pirate Bay, watch all of the Grey's Anatomies and dehydrated myself getting them on Pirate Bay. So back then, I just didn't think about it. But now I think when we see what's happening, and not to be worthy about it, but in the media landscape, right, by removing the money from the pockets of the broadcasters or the networks that facilitate this, it is impacting jobs. It is impacting the quality of the service that they offer. Nobody likes paying out money. I completely get it. But, you know, we see people paying, you know, hundreds of euro to go to one rugby match that they could watch on telly for free at home. So, like, people are happy to pick and choose when they spend their money. And I'm not saying that that is the right attitude to have, but I'm saying that it just doesn't fly anymore. Like, the notion of, sure, it doesn't impact anyone. It's a victimless crime. That is not true. That is just fundamentally not true. And I get that nobody has sympathy for big corporations, particularly when you see, you know, the likes of Netflix or whatever spending millions on producing a TV show like The Crown. And you're like, sure, why should I pay 20 quid a month if I can watch something on a stream for free or for 70 quid a month or whatever it might be? It is a problem. And I do think we need to change our attitudes towards it ever so slightly. And I'm fully prepared for people to come for me for saying this, but it's illegal.
Right. We also spoke to Adam Leventhal of The Athletic, and he explains how the cost of living is the main driving factor for users.
This gets us onto one of the key issues, that there is a cost of living crisis, and that's why a lot of people are moving in this direction, because, you know, you can have an illegal streaming device that you are paying maybe, you know, £60 or, you know, 75 euros or whatever it is per year rather than per month for your subscription. So that's why people are doing it. That's why there is such a frustration. And look, in terms of, you know, highlighting why people should do this, I don't necessarily think that that's a good thing to be doing, but you can understand why people do it.
Right, so the next question to consider is what governments can actually do to combat this and how real the prospect are of fines for users of dodgy boxers. There is, and look, this is personal opinion, the idea that maybe fines and the idea of operating with legislation that can target users, that this actually won't be a popular political move. So we're going to hear from LOI TV's Mark Scanlon and Clubber's Jimmy Doyle here on how they're lobbying governments on the situation.
There's now, in one particular case, somebody who owes over 700,000 in damages for that content. So it is a crime. And, you know, from our side now, the next part really is the end users, because ultimately at this moment in time, the end users are not having any action taken against them. And that's something certainly that we would like to see in the future. In the same way, if you don't pay your TV license, there's obviously a fine. But at the minute, if you're caught with a dodgy box, that you don't have the same fines or the same level of legislation against it. So that's something that certainly all rights holders, broadcasters and streaming services would like to see introduced in the future.
Okay. Has there been formal discussion with government on that front?
Yeah, so a couple of months ago, we were in at a ruckus hearing about these streaming services and the legislation going forward. The sports committee were very generous with their time and in listening to the thoughts of all the rights holders. I think we got a very good response. The particular hearing that we were in was with ourselves and GAA Plus, and we were very much on the same page in what we're trying to do and how we want to try to bring as many games as possible to the fans.
Jimmy, I'm sure the GAA are going to make representations as well, given they've got the same vested interest in terms of GAA Plus, but I presume the Gaelic Games community will have a real role to play in terms of the lobbying that's required for government to, I guess, engage with the required legislation for users to maybe have a little bit more fear in terms of their dodgy box engagement, because right now it's pretty danger free in terms of the law.
Look, I think there's probably a number of things that need to be done. So the first thing is that companies like ourselves need to get smarter and put more protections in place on the content, as I talked about. So we will continue on that journey. I think legislation in terms of, you know, recognizing that this is pretty significant crime is happening. You know, I'm not referring to crime for us, which is, you know, drop in the ocean in the larger scheme of things, but the criminal underworld that are actually getting into this space now, I saw something quoted recently in that if you look, it's multi-billion dollar industry, and it's a much more cushy number than going out and selling drugs probably. So it's continuing to grow, and my understanding is that the numbers quoted anyway were that, like, it's, you know, it's up there with a third is kind of drug trafficking, a third is people trafficking, and a third now is piracy. So it's big business in terms of large scale criminal underworld. And the other ones that I mentioned are well catered for in legislation, and there's a lot of activity happening to try and take action there, whereas you're seeing more and more starting to happen, and I think you'll start to see more and more happening in terms of the people who are actively dealing in the piracy, and probably some of the consumers as well. I think you'll start to see more pain happening there. So that will kind of be the second thing that I expect you'll see more activities happening. And the third thing is that there's really, in reality, all of these pirates need a large set of intermediaries, which are effectively, you know, what we call CDNs or large data centers, because they need to serve the content back out again to people on the dodgy boxes. So they still have to do that. And that requires partnership with a lot of the same people that all the legitimate people are working with. And there are really only about 250 of those in Europe that can handle that scale. And so, again, my understanding from reading some of the materials in the space, that 80% of those are good actors. So there's really only a small amount of people who are making their services available, knowingly probably, to these pirates. And so if legislation could be brought to that space, I think you could see a lot more return.
The Italy story is certainly one that I feel broke new ground in Europe. You'll have a better grasp on this than I will. Talk to us about how Italy have managed to do this and what this means for Irish society.
So what Italy has done is go a step further than what we were doing, which, as I said, was very much looking at the sellers. And we made great progress, and you cited some of the very famous cases that were there. But Italy, using a whole host of service providers, managed to identify the individual users and issue fines. So that was the first instance where somebody in the house got the knock on the door and got the fine. And there's a few different ways that this can work, because, again, people might think, well, sure, how could they know?
Yeah.
Because I don't have a bill coming in every month from this service provider. But this is where in this country and what's being looked at, it hasn't been set in stone, but what's being looked at is how the ISPs, which are the internet service providers, can be part of this solution. Also, Amazon are making huge strides now to try and tackle some of this as well, because a lot of the dodgy boxes are delivered on Amazon Fire Sticks, which, for those who don't know, are essentially like USB sticks in the back of your telly, that have been modified and give users access to servers. So there's a technological solution to this problem. There are going to be issues such as GDPR, privacy, user privacy, and all that kind of stuff. But Sky Ireland in particular have a bee in their bonnet about this.
Of course.
And, you know, one of the cases that I was reading about, I think Sky lost out on around €800,000 worth of revenue because of one dodgy box provider. Like, it's a lot of money.
Yeah. We also caught up with some of the smaller Irish streamers, including Mark Scanlon of LOI TV and Jimmy Doyle, who runs Clubber. Clubber are the company who bring you the Club GEA games, and they spoke about the impact dodgy boxes are having on these services and that they'll still be able to bring the fans the product in the future. League of Ireland director Mark Scanlon is first up here.
We were going into the unknown at the start, just putting as many games as possible out there, making sure the fans could see them. And it became apparent really in that first season, the impact of dodgy boxes, you know, just anecdotally from speaking to people at the time, from seeing things on social media, how easy it was for people to actually pick these up on illegal streaming, which sort of surprised us in the first place, how accessible all the games were. But that's become more of a problem over time. A fan survey almost 18 months ago now at this stage showed that 50% of people were consuming their LOI TV content via dodgy boxes. So as you can imagine, for a small startup business like LOI TV, trying to provide a service where we provide 550 games a year across men's and women's football, that impact on the revenue massively impacts what we can do to develop the service further and improve it for the fans.
Maybe a year or two in, we started to see some of our games appearing on the dodgy boxes. So we were kind of, I suppose, thought it was great initially. It's like, this is great free marketing for us. The fact that these guys are putting this stuff up means that we're starting to become somewhat important. So that was our initial instinct, and that quickly has evolved and changed over the last couple of years, where we can now see that it significantly impacts our bottom line in terms of offering our games for free for people.
It's a really interesting conversation to have, because it is the one piece of technology that allows the NFL or the Premier League or the Champions League into your living room for free. And the same piece of technology brings Club GEA into your living room for free. So you guys are operating at wildly different levels of the food chain when it comes to revenues available to you. Is it too dramatic on my part to say that this is something that is existential for an organization like Clubber, given I presume the margins are quite tight in terms of the number of streamers that you need and the amount of subscribers that you need in order to make a single stream profitable for you?
Yeah, no, 100% on. Like, we are still a very young and hopefully growing company, and, you know, revenues are critical to our success to reinvest, keep growing the business, keep sustaining ourselves, and paying all the people that work for us in directly and indirectly through, you know, hundreds of videographers and commentators all over the country. And so, yes, that type of revenue leakage is absolutely very, very detrimental to our future, to be honest.
So the current tug of war then is, yes, that Sky Ireland are happy to share the IP addresses. However, the GDPR laws, which are EU-wide, can't allow them to do that fully at the moment, in Ireland anyway. How come they can do it in Italy? Maybe it's, is it a different company, or what's
so
the difference?
In relation to Italy, that was very much a case of that they brought in legislation to tackle this. And this is the key, this is the bit that would unlock it, right? We need to introduce some form of legislation that at the moment, dodgy boxes are kind of mainly covered under the Copyright Act of 2000. But that's why the sellers have been the target of that. So we need to go a step further and introduce legislation that would allow, in a GDPR compliant way, information to be shared to help identify who is using what. And the technology and the technical capability is there to identify that.
Let's hear a little bit more from Adam Leventhal here. Adam's done a good bit of reporting on the situation in the UK and the shutdown of these operations.
The anti-piracy groups and the leagues and the clubs and the broadcasters know that they'll never be able to eradicate it. They just need to disrupt it. And commonly it's termed as a whack-a-mole game, that they know full well that they'll take down one site or one operator that may well operate, you know, hundreds of domains, but they know full well that a whole load of other ones will pop up elsewhere. And the Stream East one is a really good example of that. They were getting 1.6 billion users per year, which is an incredible audience. But that in itself, although it was the biggest takedown that there has ever been, I'm sure there will be bigger ones in the future because it's growing. The fact that it was so big, it was still only a copycat site. So you had a weird sort of dynamic that some people who responded to our initial reporting on it being taken down saying, no, my Stream East is absolutely fine, thank you very much. It's still working. But then at the same time, you also get, you know, sadness and defiance from people saying, well, you can't take this away. This is something that I rely on. And I think that it's part of the culture. So in terms of how much, you know, organizations can actually take down, the Premier League, for example, they said that they took down around about 600,000 sites last year, either taking them down or using blocking orders which exist in the UK. So it's a real fight that so many stakeholders are trying to carry out. But at the same time, the industry is growing and growing, and it's very easy for people to access these apps and these services.
Jimmy, have you looked into the technology behind the piracy at all? Because I've always wondered how on earth there is the availability of a club junior match in a county that's well off Broadway that has made its way onto a dodgy box. Someone somewhere has gone to the work of doing this to serve whatever it may be, fewer than 100 people potentially.
Yeah, I guess the value for money from our perspective is that, you know, we've done the hard work of collating them all into one place for them, and therefore, you know, our systems are designed. They're designed to make it easy to transfer video over the internet. So, you know, in the modern era of streaming, you know, everybody's working with a bunch of partners in the ecosystem. And so, you know, we'll create the stream, bring it together, get it encoded, send it to a player that, you know, is a generic player that all major broadcasters around the world will be using. But that player needs to understand what we're passing them in order to show it on your TV or your laptop or wherever. And so once we do the passing of that information to a third party, that's at the interception. That's the opportunity then for the pirates to come in and steal it. And so that happens throughout the ecosystem of all major broadcasters. And that's, you know, that's the opportunity for them to come and take it. But to your question, we've done the hard work of collating it all together in one place and then making it easy to transfer it, you know, onto TVs or your phones, etc. So therefore they understand those patterns the same way as, you know, we have to do the pattern to pass it on to the TV, if you get me.
Okay, yeah.
So we know there's things we can do to make it more complicated for them. And for companies like ourselves, we hope that if we can, you know, add a little bit more hassle for them along the lines of what you're alluding to, that they may just, okay, maybe just stick to the big boys then in terms of more bang for the buck for them in terms of, you know, the games.
Just a final point on the current state of play for users in Ireland. Currently, it sounds like there's no threat if you're a user in Ireland, but given the powers that are operating the legal platforms and the money that they have and the power that they have, the lobbying will probably become overwhelming for the Irish government, and the legislation is probably imminent, given that we do have an Italian case mm-hmm. study. So we're talking probably 1 or 2 years before wheels are in motion?
Potentially. Like, these things do tend to move slowly. You know, like I've spent a lot of time the last few weeks talking about social media and our young people. And if you think about it, like I left school in 2007, we were on Bebo and we were talking about the need for legislation in terms of our young people online back in 2007. And it's 2025 and we're still just getting our head around it. So look, these things do tend to move slowly. What I would say is there's enough of an economic incentive for things to potentially move faster.
Yes.
Now, obviously, the good thing with being in the EU is that we do have things like GDPR. And so consumers, you don't need to panic about this, right? It's not a case that's going to happen overnight and you're going to be ratted out or anything like that. But there will be movement in this over time, for sure.
Do you have any concerns when you use illegal sites about the data or information that you do hand over?
Probably, yeah. I probably don't think about it too much because I'm just watching the sport. But yeah, if you think deeper into it, yeah, you probably are giving over data that you probably aren't aware of.
It's sketchy stuff when you're trying to accept just random things that you're like, I'm just trying to watch sports. Why am I trying to get my data accepted into stuff?
To be honest, probably. But at the same time, to watch my team lose every weekend, the data is not the first thing on my mind.
Probably not. I haven't thought too much about it in terms of where the data's going.
What do you mean the data being handed over?
The data they can access from using devices on your Wi-Fi and your network.
No idea.
No idea?
No idea.
Honestly, no. It's not something I've really given much consideration to.
If I was to now, yeah, definitely. Back then, probably didn't occur to me. It was too soon.
Are you worried about that?
Well, I think my mum just got hacked because she was using a site to watch football. And they've hacked her emails. Yeah.
So we just give away our whatever we... Yeah.
And would you continue to use the sites even though you know someone who's been done by them?
Probably.
This is my personal opinion. I'm not sure if this is right or wrong, but you often hear talk around malware, data leaks as another risk to using a dodgy box. Mm. My opinion on that is that this is something that you could argue is being peddled by Sky and by the corporations that are being affected by this as a scare tactic.
Yep.
Is it a scare tactic or is there a real threat to you if you're using this other than the threat of the law that's coming down the road?
There is a real risk.
Okay.
So... if and when you get your hands on one of these dodgy boxes, the way they work, so they can come in the form, as I said, of a Fire Stick or another device that's running Android, which is the operating system on Google-based devices. And in order to access the servers, in most instances, you are prompted to use a VPN, a virtual private network. That then sort of bypasses certain servers giving you access to the content. But there are reports, and there have been reports, of firstly, these sticks being loaded with malware, which is essentially a virus that once you're plugging in, and again, to access this, the content, you need to have it on your home Wi-Fi network. If you have an unprotected device plugged in on your home network, you are vulnerable. So not only could it be potentially... you know, a virus that can corrupt your system or do damage on your system, but it could also make all of the content on your Wi-Fi network compromised. So if you think about it, like when I go home tonight now, I'll log into my banking. So all my banking information, I'll probably log into my social media, log into my email, all of that content is there. Then also, if you think about the fact that like in my house, we've got a video doorbell, we have cameras around the place, we have smart speakers. Do I want something that's compromised being on that Wi-Fi network and potentially being compromised in some way?
This is why, as a tech correspondent, you can never have any sort of a legal streaming power. You just know too much about this stuff. Ignorance is bliss.
This is why I'm when so it comes chill. To these, yeah.
Okay, well, that's good to clear that up. When it comes to malware at the moment, again... personal opinion, don't know anything about technology per se. Malware feels like a very 2008 sort of phrase. Is it still a risk? Like, I mean, somebody who plugs a Fire Stick into the back of their TV, what's the worst that malware can do? I mean, they can just buy a new Fire Stick.
Someone at the HSE opened an attachment on an email and caused the biggest cyber attack that this country has ever seen.
That's a good point.
How much would you be willing to pay for subscription for something that would cover all of the sports that you watch?
Well, obviously, I'm using Now TV at the moment, but you'd say cover everything. Probably about €50 a month, I'd say. Maybe a bit less. I'm not too sure. I know I pay €35 with Now TV, but that doesn't cover everything. Obviously, there's 3 o'clock games in England, or more so other sports as well. So probably, yeah, you would probably up it to probably about €50 a month.
Yeah, Jose, $5 would be nice, but realistically, all of them, €15?
For legally, I suppose, if you're paying for the movies and sports and such, look, 20, as in what Netflix is like, 13 quid now.
20 a month.
For, yeah, 20 a month, as in if you had movies and you had your selection, as in, look, a nice idea would be a mix of all the subscription of it sites, like, but at 20 a month, you got all your movies and your sports, be reasonable enough.
Be 40 or 50 quid a month?
Well, the streaming service I use at the minute is 85 a year, so, you know, for really good coverage, probably up to 250 a year. The main issue was we had Sky for maybe 10, 11 years, and it was like upwards of €180 a month. And that was the main issue. It was just unaffordable.
It does beg the question as to what the future of sports streaming is going to be. Like, again, if you go back 10, 15 years ago, the idea of paying for music was actually a rarer thing than it is today, weirdly. Now, granted, I'm not going to sit here and say that Spotify is a great organization that rewards everybody who should be rewarded well, but it does show that people have gone from torrenting music to at least paying something for their music. It's much smaller than it would have been if they were buying every individual album 30 or 40 years ago, but it still shows that there is an appetite to pay something that people feel is somewhat fair. Does the sport necessarily follow the pattern that music has set?
Well, it's what a lot of people speak about as a good example where an industry learnt that the direction of travel was, a call to action, and it saw a response. I think that the problem with football is it's very difficult for it to just stop and recalibrate itself and adjust all its financial structures. And a good example of that is the way that rights deals are done. There's that sort of overlapping sort of situation where you'll get the UK rights have been renewed, the global rights have been renewed, and it's almost like a never-ending cycle whereby we need to actually stop this, and someone needs to actually step in and say, well, look, can we not, for example, I don't know, just as a hypothetical, UEFA, they need a platform, the individual leagues need platforms, FIFA needs a platform, and then it just makes it easier that everyone can access all of the games in one place or two places or whatever it is, just to make it easier for the consumer. Because at the moment, what they're doing is they are getting what a lot of people think, well, actually, that's a really good product. You know, you have your IPTV service. You can go on there. You think, right, I know a game is on somewhere. I will search it up and away we go. You know, it just feels now that we're in an era where you think, well, that should exist for everyone. It still shouldn't be this complicated. And therefore, that is all pinned into the financial structures of the game. And someone needs to take a step out of it all and go, look, we need to change this for the consumer. Otherwise, the consumer will continue to go in another direction. And then genuinely, the financial structures will struggle.
Jess, talk to us about what you see in the future then, because I do think there is a real conversation to be had around the price of streaming, particularly if you're just a football fan in Ireland, where you've got to have your three different platforms available to you from Sky to TNT to Premier Sports. And it is an extremely expensive hobby to have is watching sport. I wonder, is there a tipping point in terms of the legality of all of this, where, again, to go back 15 years, we were all using LimeWire, some people were using LimeWire and uTorrent, some people were using iTunes legally. And then after that, Spotify became the thing. Now, I'm not saying that Spotify is anything positive for the music industry or anything like that, but people are paying Spotify premium and are pretty happy to pay that. Is there a world where sports streaming goes in a similar direction, where the vast, vast majority of people are happy to pay and actually leave the dodgy boxes and the illegal streaming in the past?
I think it depends on the price point. we've seen like the Spotify model, and again, it's not the perfect solution, but it's a really good example of where people will pay when the service is good enough and also when it's affordable. Like I think when Spotify Premium launched, it was around $9.99 a month. So for a tenner a month, you can listen to any song you want at the drop of a hat, whenever you fancy, it's all there. That was a really good proposition. Netflix, when it launched in this country, was $5.99 a month. You could watch any piece of content you want at the drop of a hat, blah, blah, blah. It's great. I think for this to be viable, not only for the companies, but indeed for people, something is going to have to give. Whether it's the case that we see more sport coming off traditional TV broadcasters and being bundled in with Netflix, Amazon Prime, whatever it is. But then are we beholden to those streaming companies where they can start charging 40 quid a month rather than $19.99 a month? This is the bit that I'm unsure of. What is the ceiling for streaming prices? Like when I sat down with my pen and paper and I did up the maths, I think I was spending around 170 quid a month on streaming services.
Wow. Now, have really been onto something over the past couple of years. And look, that's old news. It's at this stage, we all became familiar with now, probably during COVID.
Yeah.
And it was kind of the idea that, as you say, we're busy people, to actually pay for your subscription for one weekend. And even if you're buying multiple now subscriptions, you have it for that Saturday and Sunday because, you know, you're away the previous weekend, you're going to be at the pub the following weekend, you don't actually need a subscription. That sort of fluidity, I think, it feels, it's weird that that hasn't exploded and everybody's not kind of using that at the moment.
Yeah, and but again, this is where the hope in this conversation lies, right? Is that there are solutions and there's opportunity and it's a case of identifying it. And I think what we, at the moment, we have a case where the consumer feels screwed because we're paying a lot of money. The service providers feel screwed because 400,000 people are not paying the money and they're getting the dodgy boxes. Then you look at the individual sports and you look at the individual teams and clubs and individuals who are in the sporting world. Like, look at the IRFU and look at, like, the rugby would be the sport that I have most interest in, right? So if you look at the conversations that have been had in the last wee while about ticket prices, and if you look at the renaming of the RDS Arena, the Leia Arena, like, it's a reminder that all of these organisations that we love and the colours that we wear, they're all businesses. And if they don't make money, they're not going to perform. They're not going to be entertaining for you to watch. You're not going to want to watch them. They're not going to make it's going to be this vicious cycle and this trickle down effect. And so I think there's an opportunity for the business side of sports clubs and sports teams and sports as a whole to be part of this conversation and solution as well. But I think despite it all being business, they can't lose sight of the fan. And if your only option to watch whatever sport it is to pay 50, 60 quid a month on top of your traditional TV package and on top of your broadband bill and on top of your TV license and on top of all the other stuff, there's no option. And that's why, as sort of staunch as I am against dodgy boxes, I can fully understand and empathise with the fact that people do it, but I still don't think it's right.
Thanks again to Jess Kelly, The Athletic's Adam Leventhal, League of Ireland Director Mark Scanlon and Jimmy Doyle of Clubber, who all took the time to speak to us during the making of this piece.
Off the Ball Daily.